Okay, Shabbat Shalom and welcome to United Israel World Union. This is our Sabbath morning scripture study coming to you live from St. Francisville, Louisiana. Thank you very much for joining us today. We are in the midst of an ongoing series, as most of you know, on the 10 words, commonly referred to as the 10 commandments, but without scriptural support. Remember, the phrase, the Ten Commandments, is nowhere found in Scripture. Biblically, it's Aseret HaDevarim, the Ten Words. So we are working through the Ten Words, if you will. And based upon the white spaces, I always like to give this sort of an intro so everybody's on the same page, literally. But we're going according to the white spaces into word number four. Now, what I mean by that is that biblically and in the Hebrew and even in your English translations, unless you have some study Bible which incorporates this, nowhere in the text does it say this is word one or commandment one, this is word two or commandment two. You read the text and you determine based on your particular tradition, what the numbering is. In other words, in Roman Catholicism, there's a certain numbering. In Judaism, there is a generally accepted order for and numbering for the 10 words and so forth and so on. But another way to count these is to look at the breaks which occur in the Hebrew text. And I refer to these as white spaces. I taught on it several weeks ago. We have two sorts of breaks in the Hebrew text. One is called a setumah, which is a closed break. And that means you'll be reading along. There is a space of about 9 characters in width and where there are no letters. And then the letters resume. That's called a closed space. And then there is an open space which serves to function something similar to our paragraphs, where the ancient scribe would leave off wherever he was on a certain line and skip down and begin a new line. Now, what I did in this study, and you'll see it reflected on my sheet, a comparison of the 10 words in English, is I indicated in my English translation where these breaks are. And so if you begin at the beginning, I am Jehovah your Elohim, who brought you out from the land of Egypt from a house of servants. Know it will be to you Elohim, and so forth and so on. And then when I get to a white space, I begin a new line. So this way we're numbering them. So we are currently working through today, in today's class, I'll be dealing with the fourth word, if you will, the fourth of 10 words. And in short form, the way that most of you are familiar with this, especially from the English-speaking world, is from a translation that begins something like this: honor your father and your mother. Honor your father and your mother. That's the way that I learned it as a little bitty boy, and it's the way that many people in the English-speaking world have become familiar with the opening words of this particular commandment. Now, I want to reiterate that my numbering puts this as number four, but in many of the methods of numbering the 10 commandments or the 10 words, this would be number five. We're going to talk a little bit more about that as we work our way through. But the question I want to begin with today is this: what does it mean in the biblical world when one is told, honor your father and your mother? First of all, is the translation accurate? And what does it really mean to honor? Because a lot of times we tend to superimpose our own understandings to these ancient texts. So we want to get a biblical understanding of the role of parents and the way whereby children are to interact with parents. Family is a very, very important integral part of God's plan. It's been like that from the very beginning. You'll recall in Genesis chapter 18, verse 19, where when God is thinking to himself, if you read this, you're getting an internal look at God's thought. He says, and I'm paraphrasing, should I let Abraham know what I'm about to do? And he goes on to say that Abraham will teach his children. There's a big, big push within the biblical literature to stress this point that parents are to pass these things along to the children. But what other interactions exist within the biblical pages and the biblical narratives about how parents are to act to children, children are to act to parents? What does honor mean? What does one need to do in honor to fulfill this particular word? How do we honor parents? What's the Hebrew behind that? We'll talk about. Why and for what reason did this make the list? I mean, think about it. The Ten. It's called the testimony, the very testimony of the creator of mankind has a list, according to the biblical narrative, that he himself wrote with his fingers, or his finger, upon two tablets of stone, rules which ultimately, I believe, and I think I've convincingly argued, are for the whole of humanity. And in that list, this particular word makes the top 10 of all the things. Think about this. Of all the things, if you ask the creator of heaven and earth, give me 10 things that humanity needs to do. He says, okay. And this makes the list. So think about that. I mean, this is the testimony of the creator. What are some things? These are some musings that I have as I enter into today's teaching. What are some things which set this word apart from the others? In what ways does it not fit neatly, and in what ways does it align with certain other words? These are some of the thoughts that I want to talk about. And then, I guess, finally, I would say, what is the full implication of following or not following this word, honor your father and your mother? All right, so it's a pretty packed class. We're going to be going through quite a few texts. Stretch your fingers, open your minds, and let's get busy on this. Now, one of the things that I want to say is that you'll need this sheet. Now, I apologize that I've uploaded a couple of versions of this particular sheet because I'm carefully refining it. The more that I study and carefully get into this subject matter myself, I'm making minor changes and updates to reflect as accurately as I can what the Hebrew says in Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5. So you'll notice that if this is your first time logging in, those of you who have been with me for a while know this. But what I've done is I've taken the English translation of Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5, which both contain, according to the text itself, the words themselves, the words which were communicated on the day of assembly from the midst of the fire and ultimately written with the finger of God on tablets of stone. We have two accounts, Exodus 20, Deuteronomy 5. What I've done in this comparison of the 10 words in English sheet is I have placed those side by side using my literal translation in English, and then I've placed in red every variant, whether it's a single letter, a single word, or an entire phrase, so that you can quickly compare the 10 words in Exodus with the 10 words that are in Deuteronomy. Now, from a wide view, let's say you back up and you look at the 10 words, the 10-word Horeb covenant, this that we're dealing with today, the word concerning parents, is one of two words that is communicated in the positive. What do I mean by that? In other words, you have a bunch of thou shalt not, you shall know, you shall do this, no, you should do that. And then you have two that are communicated in the positive, meaning these you shall do, right? You get that. So let me just read them to you. If you're looking at the sheet, you'll look at the last entry on the first page. Now, remember, they're different. They read differently in Exodus and Deuteronomy. So I'm going to go with Deuteronomy. Please bear with me. Deuteronomy 5:12, if you don't have the sheet before you, you can open up your Bible to Deuteronomy 5:12. Guard the Sabbath day to separate it, as which Jehovah your Elohim commanded you. 6 days you shall serve, and you shall do all your work. And the seventh day is for Jehovah your Elohim. You shall not do any work, you and your son and your daughter and your servant and your handmaid and your ox and your donkey and all of your beast and your stranger who is in your gates, in order that your servant and your handmaid may rest as you. And you should remember that you were a servant in the land of Egypt, and Jehovah your Elohim brought you out from there with a strong hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, Jehovah your Elohim commanded you to do the Sabbath day. Notice that symbol on my sheet indicates a white space. Now we move into the word on parents. And it says, give weight to your father and to your mother, as which Jehovah your Elohim commanded you, in order to lengthen your days and in order that it may be well with you upon the land that Jehovah your Elohim is given to you. All right. These are the words we're going to deal with. From the words, in connection with the words, and on the basis of the words. These two commands, or these two words within the tent, are the only two which are communicated in the positive. The word on Shabbat, according to Exodus, is to remember the Sabbath day to separate it. Deuteronomy says to guard the Sabbath day. But in both cases, I taught on this last week, but in both cases, you have a positive command, if you will, to separate the Sabbath day. Deuteronomy uses the example of God redeeming the children of Israel from slavery, and that being the reason to separate the Sabbath day. You are to allow others to refresh as you're refreshed. Exodus's account refers back to the creation, suggesting that this command is about imitating God. Just as God created the heavens and the earth in 6 days and rested on the seventh, so you and I are to do our work for 6 days and then rest on the Sabbath. But it's a positive. You get to this command, give weight to your father and your mother. Now, I wanted to add that Deuteronomy is adding or including or retaining, depending on your view of which one reflects a more accurate version of what was literally written on the stones. There's a couple of phrases in Deuteronomy's word number 4 about parents that isn't in Exodus. And I just want to draw those out. You see the phrase, as which Jehovah your Elohim commanded you? That appears in Deuteronomy, but it doesn't appear in Exodus. Now, what this leads most people to suggest is that the Deuteronomy version is later, that Exodus is actually an accurate account of what God said at the mountain, what was literally written on the stone. And most people believe that Deuteronomy reflects a reflecting back on those original words by Moses, who adds this phrase, just like Jehovah your God commanded you. Makes sense. It could be. All right. But that's the reason that most people attribute the additional phrase. Now, this phrase, as which Jehovah your Elohim commanded you, occurs in one other word in the 10 words. It's the Sabbath word, the one that we just read. So in the Sabbath word and in the word dealing with parents, you've got this phrase, as which Jehovah your Elohim commanded you. Interestingly enough, these two commands or these two words seem to be connected. They have a lot to do with one another. They're both, as I pointed out, they're both positive, the only two positive. They're the only two words which contain this phrase. And so I'll be making a few points about how they agree with the words and how they don't agree with the words and so forth as we go forward. Now, this particular word that we're dealing with today about parents is and has been described as the first commandment with a promise. Now, for those of you who don't know me, this is not particularly a Christian class. It is a biblical class. Primarily, my teaching comes from the Hebrew Bible. But I do want to point out that in Christian literature, in the Christian New Testament, in the book of Ephesians, chapter 6, verse 2 and following, which is attributed to Paul, there is this particular word is mentioned. And it says, honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise. Now, what this particular portion of Paul's letter is doing, he's commenting on this essential command, on this essential word, and he goes on to state, just as our word says in the Hebrew text, that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. Now, to this, the writer of Ephesians adds a little bit of commentary. And you, fathers, don't provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Now, this is a teaching. It's an exposition, if you will, of the word on the parents. And I think it's pretty sound advice. In other words, children should honor their father and their mother. But parents should give themselves in such a way and behave themselves in such a way and lead the family unit in such a way that they're worthy of that honor. I believe that. I think that's good advice. Notice that the command or the word that we're talking about today is not thou shalt love your mother and your father. Now, I'm not suggesting that you shouldn't. I think you should. But when we talk about what is commanded and what is demanded and required, it's to honor. Now, this brings up a whole host of questions that can apply to individual circumstances. There are people who have the worst possible family unit, things that I can't even imagine. There are people who have been abused, or people who've been abandoned, and there are people who have great remorse and horrible feelings and guilt associated with this because they say, I can't honor the people who did this to me. But that's a whole nother discussion. But I did want to mention that I want you to understand that if you were brought up in one of those horrible situations, then I would say to you that I feel for you. I truly, truly do. And I pray that you can come to grips with this. But I'll also say, just in passing to make this point, that there are passages throughout the Hebrew Bible where we recognize that God realizes this. For instance, There's a passage in the prophets, and I'll give you these quotes later exactly. But the idea that just came to my mind is that shall a mother forsake her nursing child? You know, because your natural thought is no. Can you imagine a mother that would forsake a nursing child? And then the passage goes on and it says something to the effect that, but even if so, you know, it's like there are those rare occasions. And we have this image in biblical literature that Jehovah is a father. So for those who did not have a good role model, a good father in an earthly representation, you also can't forget that you have your father who is in heaven, which is a very Hebrew Bible point. So think about that. Now, additional to what the Christian writings say about this particular command, I should add this, that the rabbinic sages also considered this particular command to be of great importance. In fact, according to the sages, this particular word is the foremost among the commandments for which man is rewarded in this world, right? And you go, wow. I mean, think about that. The idea is that of all the commands, this particular command was considered, according to the greatest minds of Judaism, to be the most important, if you will, the foremost, in which we're talking about rewards in this life, in this age. It is to be reckoned, according to the sages, as the weightiest commandment. Think about that. Now, I'm here to tell you today that I believe that one of the greatest problems on our troubled planet is a breakdown of the family unit. I believe that. I really, truly believe that. I believe that because of the tearing apart of the family, I think that whether people admit it or not, whether they realize it or not, that this shattering of the ideal has created many, many of the difficulties and made things worse. And so I would say at the beginning of my class, if you are a parent, understand that this is so essential that you do this right. And if you're a child, and all of us are children, that we respond to this word adequately and appropriately, because the restoration of the family unit is one of the key things and the only thing, according to the prophet Malachi, which is bordering the fence between normalcy and blessing and utter chaos and destruction. Think about that. You know what it says in Malachi? That that Elijah will come and he will return the hearts of the fathers to the sons and the sons to the fathers, lest I come and strike the earth with Kerem, which is a devotion, a ban to utterly destroy. So what I want you to understand is that this ideal about the parent and the children and that restored family unit is the only thing that is, it's bordering on utter chaos and destruction. Those are the options. So having sort of given this idea, I want to move into sort of an exposition of the Bible in terms of what this interaction between parents and children ought to look like, and what does this command or this word really mean? Now, I want to point out that after this word about parents, after this word, God is not mentioned in title or in name at all. Okay? Now, I just want to make this point. I want you to understand what I'm saying. Underscore this idea that from at the end of this word, by the time we reach the end of this word, from the beginning where it begins at the very beginning, I am Jehovah, your Elohim, and so forth and so on. From there to the end, where it says, upon the land that Jehovah, your Elohim, is giving to you, after that point, Elohim, God, is not mentioned at all in word or in title. But in each of the words, including the one we're working on today, all of those to the one we're working on now does contain God. Okay? Now, I brought up, I'll get to that in just a moment. Let me make one more point. Everything which follows today's class is going to be very clearly dealing with human interactions between other humans, human to human, okay? Mankind to mankind. And specifically, I might add, almost without exception, or I could say for the most part, dealing with interactions outside the family unit. Now, when we get to thou shalt not steal, you could, technically, a person could rob his parents, which is like a double whammy, I guess you could say. And we'll get to a text that actually talks about that today. But generally, the ones following today are going to be dealing with human-to-human interaction outside the family. So, by the way, even though all which follows today is separated by white spaces, you can read it, at least according to Deuteronomy, as like one continuous thing. Let me give you an example. Look at page 2 of my handout. If you're in the Bible and you don't have the handout, look at Deuteronomy 5:17. You shall not murder, and you shall not adulterate, and you shall not steal, and you shall not answer against your neighbor as a false witness, and you shall not desire your neighbor's woman, and you shall not crave your neighbor's house, his field, his servant, and his handmaid, and his ox, and his donkey, and all that is for your neighbor. It's like a package. You know, it begins with you shall not murder, and then you just work down. Don't do all these things. Now, these seem to fit together, and I would propose that from the beginning until the one we're working on today, that they seem to fit together. Now, tradition says, note very clearly that I say tradition says, that on the tablets, one tablet contained those commands which deal or which address human interactions with God, and the other tablet contained those words which deal with human interactions with humans, man to God, man to man. Now, I want to stress this. It doesn't say that in Scripture. Nowhere in Scripture does it say what was written on what tablets. We just simply don't know. All that we get from Scripture, I've already covered in previous classes. We know that God wrote these words on two tablets of stone. There were two tablets. They were written with the finger of God. They were written on both sides, on the front, on this and on that. But beyond that, we don't know how they were divided up. It is, however, worth noting that if you read the commands, let's read the first five together, and you'll notice that in each of these, the word Elohim or the name Jehovah is mentioned. Watch this. Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 6. I am Jehovah your Elohim, who brought you out from the land of Egypt, from the house of servants. No, it will be to you other Elohim above my face. No, you shall make for yourself an idol. Every form that's in the heaven above, it's in the earth beneath, that is in the waters beneath the earth. No, you shall bow down to them, and no, you shall serve them, because I, Jehovah your Elohim, zealous El, am accounting iniquity of fathers upon sons and upon third and upon fourth for one's hating me and doing loving kindness to thousands, for one's loving me and for one's guarding his commands. No, you shall lift the name of Jehovah your Elohim for falsehood, because Jehovah will not clear one who lifts his name for falsehood. Guard the Sabbath day as which Jehovah your Elohim command. You see, each of these, and then when you get down, I just read that, that's the reason I'm not reading it again. And then give weight to your father and to your mother as which Jehovah your Elohim commanded you. Every one of these mentions God, either in title or in name, and all which follows, no, it doesn't. So that's one of the reasons that people indicate that this is the way they were divided on the tablets. Again, it doesn't say this in Scripture, but if you're going to display these in your home, you might do them in that way. Put all the ones to God, dealing with human and God interactions, and the other tablet, you would put the others on. I want to make a few observations on parents and the ideal family. And these are meant to prepare us for why this is so important and why possibly, even though our interaction with our parents is a human interaction, I believe that it more properly fits in the world of the divine. Okay, fair enough. You see where I'm going with this? I believe that when you consider that a father and a mother together, and only in this coming together, can humans in some way become a representative or a picture of divinity, right? Because when a man and a woman come together and create a child, they together represent an ideal picture of God. Go with me. Let's do this. Go with me to Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1 and verse 26. Genesis 1, 26. And God said, let us make Na'ase Adam. Let us make Adam, mankind, in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth. And God created Adam. Now, most translations will say man, but if it says Adam, you know, people tend to think of the man in the garden, but this is more of a general. God created Adam in his own image, and the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. This unique part of the creation, nothing is like it. Psalm 8 talks about this. Remember, what is man that you are mindful of him? The son of man. Remember this in Psalm 8? It says he created him a little lower. Now, I grew up King James, right? So it said a little lower than the angels. But in Hebrew, it's a little lower than the Elohim. So this is unique. And the way that we get the picture, if we read from Genesis 1, Genesis 2, we work through these creation narratives, the image that we get is that this first creation, Adam, is male and female together. Okay, stick with me. Now, look, I know people are like, wow, this is kind of mystical for Ross. I'm not trying to get all Kabbalistic on you. I'm going with what the text says. God creates a being in his image. Adam, Batsalmo, in his image. in his likeness. And it's male and female. Now, how do I know this? Because later it says he causes a tardama, deep sleep, to fall upon the Adam, and he pulls out of this creature, I guess you could say, this being, this Adam, he pulls out, in English it says a rib, but it's a chamber, guess what, it can mean a cell, right? So how is that for science in the Bible? I'm not a scientist, but I think it's interesting. Atzela is a word for cell. If you're doing genetics, and so people can go as deep as they want on this. My point is that this first creation as male and female together, and God then separates them, and they then become male and female, and only then when they come together can they create life, because only together are they in the image of God. You got that? All right. Now, I'm not going to go too far with this biology class. I'll let you take that from there. But go with me to chapter 2 and verse 21. And Jehovah God, chapter 2, verse 21 of Genesis, caused a deep sleep to fall upon the man. And he slept, and he took one of the ribs and closed up the flesh thereof. And the rib, or the atzelah, the cell, let's see. And the rib which Jehovah God had taken from the man, made he a woman and brought her unto the man. And the man said, "This is now bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. She shall be called Isha, because she was taken out of Ish." She shall be called a woman because she was taken out of a man. "Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh." And they were both of them naked. The man and his wife were not ashamed. Now, here's the idea. When they are together, therefore, when a man and woman, when they come together, they are lebasar echad, for one flesh. So my point being that when the male and the female are together, they're one, echad, and they are in the image of God. Only then. All right? Because that's the way they were created. So, also along this same thought, when you look at passages like, as I get ready to move into what the Bible says about parents, I want you to get this idea that in our human sphere, in the interaction amongst humans, the closest picture of divinity that we have here in this realm is parents. It's not a priest. It's not a religious ruler. Please understand this. Not a prophet, it's not a king, it's not a politician, it's a parent. It's the highest order is a parent. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 1 says, "Remember your Creator in the days of your youth." But I want you to know that in the Hebrew, it's plural. Remember your creators. And I've often thought about the idea that this is a reference to the idea that I'm talking about. Parents literally are our creators. I'm not taking anything from God. Understand, I'm talking in the earthly realm to earthlings. So you should get that. Philo made this particular comment. Philo says, "This commandment on parents, he, God, placed on the borderline between two groups of five. It's the last of the first set in which the most sacred injunctions are given. And it adjoins the second set which contains the duty of man to man. The reason I consider is this, Philo continues. We see that parents by nature stand on the borderline between the mortal and the immortal. I'm not typically a big fan of Philo. I think he's a bit, his views are a little bit different than mine in many occasions. But the idea that I want to convey is that this word about parents are on that borderline between human-to-human interaction and human-to-God. It's as close as you get here. Think about that. Honor. What does it mean when we say honor your father and your mother? In Hebrew, it's kaved. Kaved is the word that is used there, which translates as honor in many of your translations. Now, I want to give you a couple of examples because I, as a student of language, particularly biblical Hebrew, I always find it interesting to see how a translator struggles with nuance and how do I, because they know what they're looking at. They know the Hebrew, but they struggle with how do I bring that into English where it makes sense to an English reader or any language, really, whatever the language to which you translate into, the receiving language. How do you bring one word or language term into another language and give the right idea? Okay, so I'm going to give you a couple of examples of translation trying to bring this word kaved into English, right? It's translated honor in that verse that we just read. But let's look. Go with me to Genesis 18 and verse 20. Genesis 18 and verse 20. Now, this is a little test for you. And Jehovah said, because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous. Anybody want to try to figure out the word that's translated honor? Our word, our root word, kavad, kaf, beit dalet, is in this particular verse. What is it? I'm not going to tell you that. Now I'll go ahead and tell you. Grievous. Now, understand, I want to make this point. If I were to take that word grievous and put it back in our parents' command, does that make sense? Grievous or grieve your father and your mother? Well, certainly not, right? So one of the two, either we're trying to find a way to express, which I'm going to explain to you in a few minutes. We're trying to find a way to express a concept or a word or a term in English, but this is the same root word. All right, go with me to Genesis 48:10. Genesis 48:10. And it says, now the eyes of Israel were dim for age, so that he could not see, and he brought them near unto him, and he kissed them and embraced them. Our word occurs in this particular passage. But there's no word honor in English. Listen to this. The eyes of Israel were dim, dim for age. Dim is our word. Now, I'm going to explain all this in a few minutes, so I know some of you are probably on the chat. I can't keep up. But you're probably saying, here's what it really says. So you're trying to get away and ruin my whole fun class. Don't do that. No, I'm just picking. Now, look at Exodus chapter 8. Exodus chapter 8. We're looking for our word kaved, the root word, kaf, beit, dalet. Exodus 8, and let's just say verse 15. If you're in the Hebrew, it's going to be verse 11. I think. Let's see if I can. Yeah. But when, verse 15 in English. But when Pharaoh saw that there was respite, he hardened his heart and hearkened not unto them as Jehovah had spoken. Our word kaved is there. It's translated there as hardened. But does it make sense to harden your father and your mother? Right? See, so we're trying to figure out what does this word really mean. Go down to verse 32, 8:32 in Exodus. If you're in the Hebrew, it's going to be 28, I guess. And Pharaoh hardened his heart this time also, and he did not let the people go. Hardened. That's our word, kaved, root word. By the way, there are a bunch of others. So what we have is, we have the idea that sin can be grievous, is the way it's translated, but sin can be tied to our root word, kavad. And an eye can be kavad, all right? Dim your father and your mother. No, it doesn't work. What I like to do is find what's the real root meaning of a word and then see if it fits. You know, it may be a little awkward in English, but maybe it fits anyway. My teacher, Dr. Tabor, this is the way he does things. He wants to know, first of all, what is the root meaning of a word? And let's try to keep it as literal as possible. In a very literal sense, by the way, you know, the glory of the Lord appears, and the glory of the Lord shall appear, and so forth, the glory of Jehovah. That root word is also kavod. Kavod, the kavod Adonai, the kavod Jehovah. But it's the same root letters, kaf, bet, dalet. In a very literal sense, the root meaning of kaf, bet, dalet means heavy, means to give weight. An Akkadian cognate, A-K-K. I know if I'm talking to southern Louisiana, they have a different definition of Akkadian. I'm not talking about across the river. But Akkadian with two K's is an Eastern Semitic language group. You know, if you think of Assyrian and Babylonian text in cuneiform tablets, whenever linguists study Hebrew and Semitic languages, they look at groups of languages. So we not only, like I don't know a host of Semitic languages, but I'm familiar with the interaction of these Semitic languages. A lot of times you can look at Hebrew, Aramaic, Arabic, Akkadian, these various studies, and you'll find that the cognate language groups give you some insight as to what a word means. There is an Akkadian-related word to this kaved, and it means to load, L-O-A-D, to load. To load with stuff, to give things to them, to give possessions, necessities, food, clothing. In other words, to care for. You know, you can see how you could build on this idea. What does it mean to be kaved? It means to be loaded. Like we even say that in our world. People can say, you know, that Ross is rich. He's loaded. They really wouldn't say that. But you get the point. Somebody who's wealthy, who has a lot of possessions, is loaded down. Heavy, you know. So that's the idea that we seem to be looking at here. Our root idea is on heaviness or weight. So for instance, when I go to Genesis 18:20, as I did earlier, and I say that the sin was grievous, listen to this, the sin was heavy. It was loaded with sin. You could say that, right? You get the idea? It's loaded. Now, Genesis 48:10, Jacob's eyes are heavy with age. He can't even keep his eyes open. He's so old, right? That's the idea. They're heavy. If you're blind, your eyes are heavy. It's like you can't. Look, do this. Like if you were trying to struggle to open your eyes, you ever been so tired that you, and you, we even say that, man, my eyes are heavy. You see? So is there a reason that a translator comes up with these other translations? No, not at all. You're understanding what I'm saying. Pharaoh's heart is hardened. We get this idea, God hardened Pharaoh's heart. Well, quite often it says he's heavy-hearted. Would you be heavy-hearted if you were witnessing? Or he's loaded. It's like he's emotionally loaded. Like the burden is great. See, it gives a different picture, doesn't it? Well, that's the reason that we want to go to the Hebrew to look at this thing. Now, kaved, another way that I can do this to help us understand what it means to honor or kaf beit dalet, our father and our mother, is by looking at an antonym. What's the opposite of kavad? Remember, it means heavy, to load. But what's the opposite? There is an opposite, and it's Kof Lamed Lamed in Hebrew. Now, go with me to 1 Samuel chapter 2. 1 Samuel chapter 2 and verse 30. 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 30. Therefore, Jehovah, the God of Israel, saith, I said indeed, that thy house and the house of thy father should walk before me forever. But now Jehovah says, be it far from me, for them that honor me, I will honor, and they that despise me shall be lightly esteemed. Now, your translations may read a little bit differently, but that last passage, be it far from me, for them that honor me, I will honor. That's the root word, kaved, kavad. Those that give weight to me, you know, this is what God's saying, I will do the same to them. But those that despise me, some translations say I will curse. But in Hebrew, it says lightly esteemed because the root word, kof lamed lamed, is the opposite of kaf beit dalet. You have kaf beit dalet, which means heavy, laden, loaded, and you have kof lamed lamed, which means light. So what God's saying, look, if you give weight and honor and glory to me, I'll give it to you. But if you despise me, you'll be treated lightly. Psst. Like you go, something is light, that's nothing. It's like it's a speck of sand on the scale of time. I'll just consider it lightly. Look at Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 16. Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 16. And it says, thou art filled with shame and not glory. Drink thou also, and be as one uncircumcised. The cup of Jehovah's right hand shall come round unto thee, and foul shame shall be upon thy glory. Look, shame in this context is kof lamed lamed. You're filled with lightness, right? You're filled with nothing. Just shallow. Yeah, it's nothing. And not glory, not weight. There's nothing to it. There's no substance to it. See, this is the idea. Proverbs 3:35. I'm not going to read all these, but put this in your notes. Proverbs 3:35 is another example of contrasting the light and heavy. You know, if something is light, it's nothing. If something's heavy, it's got substance. It's got real... It's right. Go with me to Genesis 12, though. I do want to do this one, Genesis 12, because a lot of people don't know this. In Genesis 12, verses 1 through 3, this is Jehovah's call to Avram, all right? So he's calling Avram out of, or get out of your country and so forth. I want you to go down to verse 3, chapter 12, Genesis verse 3, and I will bless them that bless thee, and him that curses thee, I will curse, and in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. Now, there are various translations to that. In Hebrew, and I will bless them who bless you, and the one who, it's kalelcha. It's got that root word, kof lamed lamed. It doesn't say, whoever curses you, I will curse. So a lot of times people say, well, you better back Israel. I'll say this, because God says this is the chosen, you know, and here's the deal. If you bless Abram, God will bless you. And if you curse Abram, God will curse. You don't even have to go that far with it to receive the curse. Guess what you have to do? Consider it lightly. Right? That's what it says. It says, kalelcha aor, I will curse. Whoever considers you light, Abram, I'll curse them. But see, the English tends to force things into the text which don't occur in the Hebrew. So what we're talking about, and by the way, Abram, whose name is changed to Abraham, is the father of us all, right? If you look at the, particularly the Western world religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, all look favorably to Abraham. You know what we could say? All three of these faiths give weight to Abraham. They honor Abraham. Now, like, you don't go, if you were to bring up to a Muslim, you go, what do you think about Abraham? He'd say, oh, yeah, Abraham, he's good. Christians, yep. In the Christian New Testament, it says Abraham is the father of us all. The Hebrew Bible, the friend of God, Isaiah 48, you know, or 41. You know, 2 Chronicles chapter 20, verse 7. The New Testament, James chapter 2. The idea is that Abraham is God's friend. He's considered, he's given weight by literally most of the world. I mean, really, you think about it, or half the world anyway. So, and so that ties, you were told, don't consider it light, which is the opposite of our word today, is to give weight to parents. So just like Abraham is a father, we should give him weight. And if you don't, you're in trouble. Okay, let's look at some texts from the Torah that deal with parents. Go with me to Exodus 21, Exodus chapter 21, and verse 17. English says, "And he that curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death." That's pretty strong. Shall surely be put to death. Now, you know what it says here? It doesn't say the one that curses his father and your mother. See, sometimes people go, well, I've never done that. Well, look what it really says. Kalel. If you esteem your parents lightly. Wow. I mean, you see the idea? So this is tied to, in a very close way, this is tied to the command or the word to give weight to your parents. You shall give weight to your parents, to your father and your mother. Here it says, if you esteem your father and your mother lightly, mot tamut, dying you shall surely die. Okay. By the way, look at verse 15 of Exodus 21. He that smites his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. Mot yumot. Mot yumot. It's a person shall surely be put to death if they smite their parents. But if they esteem them lightly, so you might say, well, I could understand if you smote your parent. But this is even, you know, verse 17 takes it even further. All right. Look with me at Leviticus chapter 20. Leviticus chapter 20 and verse 9. For every man that curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. He that cursed his father or his mother, his blood shall be upon him. Now, but it doesn't say in Leviticus chapter 20 and verse 9, whoever curses, it says, Yechalel, whoever esteems his parents lightly. You see the point? Now, I want to tell you, there is a passage, and I'll have to put the article up that I wrote. Years ago, I wrote this article. It's based on Deuteronomy 21, verses 18 through 21. I'm not going to read it. But in 1820, in Deuteronomy 21, verses 18 through 21, it deals with what is called, if you have a son, if a mother and father have a son who is a rebellious son, they'll bring him to the elders of the city at the gate, and they'll use a phrase, Zolel v'sove, this son of ours is a drunkard and a glutton, is the way it's roughly translated. Zolel v'sove. And that person will be stoned to death, right? Because they esteemed lightly. They dishonored the parents. Now, in the New Testament, in the Christian writings, there is a phrase that occurs like that, where Jesus is talking about how the crowd responded to Jesus and John. And he said, John came neither eating or drinking, and they said he has a demon. And the Son of Man, he calls himself the Son of Man, came eating and drinking, and you say a drunkard and a glutton. Zolel v'sove. So what he's saying there has nothing to do with his diet. He's not talking about what he eats, you know. He's talking about the charge at that time was that he was a rebellious son and as such should be killed. That's what that means. But if you don't understand the Hebraic context, you miss that. But Deuteronomy 21, verses 18 through 21 is also important. Now go with me to Deuteronomy 27, Deuteronomy 27 and verse 16. Cursed be he that setteth light by his father or his mother, and all the people shall say, Amen. Makle. The idea is, again, this is a list of the curses. Like, cursed be he that, cursed be he, cursed be he. And excuse me, one of the curses is cursed be the one who esteems his parents lightly. Why? Because the word is to give them weight. And honor is, by the way, honor is a good, I like it too. You could say honor, you could use a whole host of different words, but that's one. Dignify might be another way to put it. But the idea is that you give weight to your parents. I like to think about it if you're on a seesaw, you know, and you get up when the heavier person is in your presence. Just like the Torah says that you shall stand in the presence of, you know, it's like you give weight. They're the weighty person in the room. You see, that's the idea. Leviticus 19:3, please. Leviticus 19:3. Now, Leviticus 19 is called by academics, called by scholars, the Holiness Code. It's part of what is called the Holiness Code. And I wanted to pick up in verse 3, you shall fear every man, his mother and his father, and you shall keep my Sabbaths. I am Jehovah your God. Don't turn to idols or make for yourselves molten gods. the beginning of the holiness code. The first thing in Leviticus 19, which is the holiness code, is to fear, to have awe, to have respect for. In other words, don't treat lightly parents. You get that? You see the idea? You're supposed to fear God and fear your parents in a sense of respect. Now, the old joke is, honor your father and your mother, but fear every man his mother and his father. It's a bad joke, so nobody get mad at me. But the joke is, a lot of kids are more scared of their mother, right? Mothers don't play, and they're around you. They have to keep you in line. That the reason children grow up to be decent, contributing members of society is because mamas keep them in line. Generally, you know. Anyway, I know there are people who could say, wait a minute, what about... Now, notice, by the way, the association at the beginning of the Holiness Code with the Sabbath and parents. You have those two together. They're together in the 10 words as well. And I pointed out, they're together in a lot of ways. They're both as which Jehovah your God has commanded you. They both have that saying. They're both positive injunctions within the 10, and they're listed together in the Holiness Code. Now, there are some proverbs which kind of go along with our class. I want to go through three of them with you. Go to Proverbs 20, 20. Proverbs 20, 20. Whoso curses his father or his mother. Anybody want to guess what that really says? Whoever esteems his father and mother lightly, his lamp shall be put out in blackness of darkness. You esteem your parents lightly? That's what you get. Look at chapter 28 of Proverbs. Proverbs 28, verse 24. 28, 24 of Proverbs. Whoever robs his father or his mother and says it's no transgression, the same as the companion of a destroyer. To rob from your parents. Now think about the most corrupt thing that you could read in the news, and it's hard now. I mean, it's hard today because the world has gone absolutely stark, raving crazy. But if you think about it, if you were to read a report in the paper and it says that a certain child robbed his parents' inheritance, and, you know, think about the worst news story. This is what this is saying. This is horrible. You're going to rob from your parents. It's like the one picture in the in human realm of God, of a creator, if you will. And don't misread what I'm saying. I'm not saying you worship your parents as God. I'm just saying, but to wrong the parent is the worst of the worst. Go with me one more. Proverbs 30. Proverbs 30 and verse 17. The eye that mocks at his father and despises to obey his mother. This is a little bit wild here. The ravens of the valley shall pick it out, and the young eagles shall eat it. Now, I'm not sure. That one seems more like a story you tell your kid. Hey, look, you better behave because the ravens are going to pluck your eyes out. So, you parents, you can scar your children with that one. Exodus and Deuteronomy's version of this word have this phrase, in order to lengthen your days in the land that Jehovah your Elohim is giving you. Right? You see that on my sheet? These two commands, again, here's another similarity between them. They both have, in order to lengthen your days. Now, there is a different phrase that's added here in Deuteronomy. It says, in order that it may be well with you. I'll talk about that in just a minute. So I've got a few more texts to go through. I'm going to begin with the common phrase, to lengthen your days upon the land. Remember, we started with, this command is a command with a reward, a promise. It's the only one, basically, if you look at it closely, that says, if you do this, this is the reward. And what's that reward? Lengthen your days on the land. Now, Exodus 20 and verse 12 has it, just like Deuteronomy 5:16 has it, but other than Exodus 20 and the 10 words, it's only found in Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy loves this phrase, but Exodus never uses it. The only time Exodus uses it is when it's recounting the 10 words. So I'm going to go through quickly a few of the texts which have this phrase, lengthen days on the land. Go with me to Deuteronomy 4 and verse 40. And I'm not going to give you the full context for time. Deuteronomy 4:40. And you shall keep his statutes, his commandments, which I command you this day, that it may go well with you and with your children after you, and that you may prolong your days in the land, saith Jehovah your God, that which Jehovah your God gives you forever. So, again, keep the statutes and the commandments, and it'll go well with you, and you'll lengthen your days in the land. All right? So you could kind of take notes. What do you need to do to lengthen your days in the command? Well, honor, give weight to your parents. Here's another one. Keep the commandments and so forth. Now go to chapter 5, verse 33. Deuteronomy 5, verse 33. You shall walk in all the way which Jehovah your God has commanded you, that you may live and that it may be well with you, and that you may prolong your days in the land which you shall possess. You see that? You want to prolong your days? You want it to go well with you? This is another thing you do. Walk in all the way which Jehovah your God commanded. Look at chapter 11 of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy 11, and I'm going to read verse 8 and 9. 8 and 9. Therefore, you shall keep all the commandment which I command you this day, that you may be strong and go in and possess the land, whither ye go over to possess it, and that you may prolong your days in the land which Jehovah sware unto your fathers to give unto them and to their seed, a land flowing with milk and honey. You want to prolong your days? You want it to go well with you? I know this isn't taught in a lot of places, but it is here. Keep the commandments. Do, keep, guard. Listen, learn, guard, do, right? Go to chapter 25 of Deuteronomy. Chapter 25, verse 13, Deuteronomy. You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small. A perfect and just weight you shall have, a perfect and just measure you shall have, that your days may be long in the land which Jehovah your God gives you. For all that do such things, even all that do unrighteously, are an abomination unto Jehovah your God. It's saying, be fair. Be fair. Like you can't, if I'm going to sell Sherry a bag of whatever, produce or whatever, and I use a larger weight, meaning I'm giving her less or whatever, you see, you can't cheat. The weight should be accurate. And it's if you're doing these kind of things, you're being dishonest. See, honesty and integrity is demanded by these words. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 32, Deuteronomy 32, verse 47. It's no vain thing for you, because it is your life, and through this thing you shall prolong your days in the land, whither you go over the Jordan to possess it. Only in Deuteronomy do we have the phrase, except for this one passage in Exodus 20, which is recounting the 10 words, do we have the phrase, lengthen days on the land. By the way, that it may go well with you, that phrase also is only found in Deuteronomy over and over and over. I read a few of them. Let me pick up a couple more just quickly as I get ready to close. If you go to Deuteronomy, say chapter 6, verse 2, Deuteronomy 6, verse 2, that you might fear Jehovah your God to keep all his statutes and his commandments, which I command you, your son, all the days of your life, that your days may be prolonged. Hear, O Israel, and observe to do it, that it may be well with you, that you might increase mightily as Jehovah, the God of your fathers, has promised you, and so forth. The 10 words, by the way, there are a lot of other examples. The 10 words from the opening phrase unto this, from I am Jehovah your God who brought you from the land of Egypt, from the house of servants, unto the end of this word, upon the land that Jehovah your Elohim is giving you, take us from Egypt and slavery to redemption in the promised land where things go well. From bad to good are represented in these first words. We've dealt with exclusivity. Associating God with anything is forbidden. There's one God, He alone. Jehovah Huha Elohim. Jehovah, He is the Elohim. As you work your way through, the next thing is false oaths are forbidden. You're not to associate God's name with falsehood. This is one of the words. This is number two. Number three is you're to set apart the day that Jehovah declared to be a set apart day. Just as Jehovah stopped, worked 6 days and stopped, so we are to imitate God and work 6 days and stop. And then we have to give weight to parents. Honoring, giving weight, distinction to our earthly creator, because our earthly creators are representing, should represent. You've just been told to imitate God. Parents should do that as well. Think of all the passages about God as a forgiving parent. God is near to all those who call upon Him. As a parent, we should be the same. Doesn't mean that we don't have justice and righteousness and rules that children must obey. Doesn't mean that they're not punished for disobedience. Doesn't mean any of that. It means that we must balance justice and mercy to the best of our ability in the raising of our children. If we don't, then society goes mad. We must present the best and most accurate representation as parents of God that we can, or the world is destined to the ban that is described in Malachi. Listen, parents, you have the most incredible, heavy task. The reason that it's described as you shall give weight to your parents, I want you to think that the weight, literally, of the future of this world is on parents. We can either do this right, or we can do it wrong. And by the looks of it, the world is unhinged. The reason that Elijah must come back, and the first thing is we have to get this peace working again. I encourage parents of young children, of old children, of adult children, parents in general, think about the heaviness of this responsibility. This, basically, at the end of my class today, I've dealt with those words which let's consider to be part of the realm of heaven. Crimes against these words are crimes directly against the heavenly realm in some way, right? And what follows are those commands or words which deal with the workings of a decent and lawful and civil societal norms between humans. So next week, we begin the journey through, beginning with You Shall Not Murder. Shabbat Shalom, Shavua Tov, have a great week, and join us next week, 10:30 a.m. Central Time, on Facebook or YouTube. Shabbat Shalom.